Welcome to another edition of Beeplecast, a weekly podcast that takes an honest and sometimes irreverent look at the state of open hardware, embedded Linux, and all things BeagleBoard.
Hi, and welcome to Beeglecast for March 7th, 2011, the inaugural podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jason Kreidner, and we'll be joined shortly by Gerald Coley and Jeffrey Osher-Mixon. We'll be getting together weekly to discuss what's new in open hardware, embedded Linux, and all things BeagleBoard. We welcome your contributions by leaving us any questions or suggestions that you might have by calling 713-234-0535 and leaving a message, or by visiting http://bit.ly/bcsuggest. We recorded this podcast using Google Voice, and we were able to bring in Jeff for just a few minutes to discuss Yocto before he had to step away for a conference.
We've got Gerald on the line, and we have a guest today, Mr. Jeffrey Osher-Mixon.
Hey there.
Glad you could join us. Maybe we can, I know you have about 15 minutes, maybe you can describe the event that's about to start and what you're going to be busy doing in about 15 minutes.
Well, in about 15 minutes, hopefully I'm going to be having breakfast and hobnobbing with lots of people who are a whole lot smarter than me. But the event that I'm at is the Intel Open Source and Technology Summit, Open Source Technology Summit, being held in Northwestern Washington, or Southwestern Washington, wherever we are, along the Columbia River.
It's an
Intel-sponsored event but it's also an event in which we discuss things like Yocto, which is
an
open source project which I'm currently managing community for.
So you are no longer at Monta Vista, and you are now the Yocto community manager.
Yes, now the Yocto community manager, working on a good open source project that is under the auspices of the Linux Foundation, and very well connected to the BeagleBoard. I'm happy to say we have a Yocto is a it's a build system that is made up. It's actually a build environment made up of the the Pocky build system, along with a whole bunch of extra goodness. And it is multi-platform. It works on MIPS, PowerPC, Intel Atom, and the BeagleBoard as an ARM platform. And we have a BeagleBoard XM BSP that is a part of it. You can download it and use it to create your own custom Linux distribution.
Yeah.
Governance and management of that is one of the things we'll be talking about at this conference this week.
Okay. Well, Yocto is doing. There's a lot of people getting involved in Yocto now. I think, TI joined Yocto this last week. Lots of other companies did. Your former employer, Monta Vista. We have Mentor Graphics.
A very familiar name pop up on the steering committee also.
There's one of those.
That would be Jason Kreidner.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to doing a lot with the Yocto.
Let's just hope that some other people have a hold of the steering wheel at the same time.
Did you see that Philip Ballister, also a very prominent BeagleBoard community member, is also on the steering team, and there's a big merge with Open Embedded this last week. I guess reaching some agreement on some of the basics of what it's going to take to have a core shared between Yocto and the Open Embedded community.
Yes, I was very glad to see that. I know that the Pocky community has been involved with the Open Embedded community, and they've been sharing technology for many years. And when I'm starting to confuse my own names here. When Pocky became a part of Yocto, there's been some confusion over the last 6 months about what was going to happen with all of that, and I'm very glad to see that the two groups are merging technology-wise, but not exactly governance-wise. Although I am now helping out the Open Embedded Steering Committee as much as I can. So it's a very not quite a merger as far as governance goes, but it certainly is there's a lot of friendship between the two groups. Open Embedded will continue on its own because, of course, Open Embedded is not just limited to embedded. There are a lot of different things going on with Open Embedded.
I just hope that this means that all the Open Embedded build tools really become reasonable to use out of the combining of all these different efforts, because they're honestly a royal pain. And yeah. I am a Gentoo Linux user. You know, when I can choose my own distro for the most part, and Open Embedded has its roots in Gentoo, but it's quite a different beast. You know, it's very focused on cross-compiling and solves a lot of problems, and there's some fantastic metadata and some fantastic tools for getting this stuff done, but it's not traditionally been the easiest to use distribution builder.
Mm.
So I'm really hopeful. I know that some of the things going on are there's some Eclipse plugins coming or that already exist, and then the Octo project that will become with the merger with Open Embedded and having the Open Embedded core, will probably be a lot more useful for building some good distributions on the BeagleBoard and having the ease of use of some of the plugins coming, some slightly improved layering in Yocto over what was the overlay approach that was being used in Open Embedded and the TI Arago project and some others.
That is definitely the hope, and I think that it has a very good chance of succeeding, given that another one of our members of the active members of the Yocto community is Kuhn.
Yep.
And participating quite a lot in the development of OE Core, which is the shared piece. And then, of course, he's got a couple of layers on top of that he uses to build Angstrom. I know that Angstrom is the basis for Arago, and you can just kind of see all the dominoes.
All these names, though, we've just got through putting together yet another brief on all these name summaries, so that my managers work up some sort of idea what the heck all this stuff is, and I find keeping up with all these names for the average BeagleBoard hacker to be something nearly impossible. But
I was just going to say, I'd love to see it if you wanted to forward that around.
Yeah, it's probably something we should drop onto the eLinux wiki.
Yeah, absolutely.
But most of the eLinux wiki users would kind of find any of my answers as to what each of these projects are probably pretty simplistic.
I think you might be surprised. Sometimes people just need a little bit of a direction before they can put all the pieces together.
Gerald, you got these all down: Ergo, Yocto, Pocky, Angstrom.
Maybe we have a user's guide to all of these. Especially if everything keeps merging and things keep disappearing.
I think that's where relying on wiki would probably be a good idea, because it would be easily updated.
That would be good.
Well, I think if you listen to Kuhn, I think that every time somebody talks about wikis being the answer and because they're so easily updated, it's always interesting to get his visceral response on that, because the wikis tend to always be out of date. They can be updated, but nobody ever does it.
Yeah, I kind of refer to wikis as a piece of bread. They can be nice and fresh. They can get kind of dried out and then get stale. But they definitely start getting green with mold, and that's the time you definitely don't want to go there anymore.
That's actually – hopefully I'll get a good project in this year. I've got some ideas. I'd like to actually do something to verify the content of the wiki pages, especially as they relate to stuff on the BeagleBoard. I think that we can actually do some automation, allowing people to really rate if a page is right, or even get some scripts running to determine if a page is right or out of date, and have some really definitive guides as to how to run all the different software distributions on the BeagleBoard.
Hey, you know what might be a good idea is to maybe suggest that to a few students if you guys are going to do the Google Summer of Code again this year.
I think that's an absolutely fantastic idea. We're certainly going to try to put forward a Google Summer of Code mentorship application. So now's the time for folks to start visiting the ideas page, and I think this will be an excellent project for a Google Summer of Code student and something to put up on the ideas page. So you can expect me to put that one up, and hopefully other people put their ideas up on what they think would be a good open source project.
Yeah, we certainly had some very interesting projects last year.
Absolutely. Before we left the Yocto project too far behind and getting updates from Kun on OE and the state of OE Core and Angstrom on top of OE Core and Yocto, he'll be giving a status update on that at the ELC conference, the Embedded Linux conference in San Francisco in April. So hopefully,
yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, we'll have a good status update on that then.
Week of April 10th, yeah. There will also be a Yocto / Open Embedded BOF during that conference as well.
Birds of a feather, okay. Just using the term BOF alone just doesn't necessarily sound pleasant to me.
That's true.
It's just where my mind goes.
Won't be any violence involved. It's a birds of a feather conversation. So it'll be an evening event in which people who are interested in that particular technology or aspect of technology can just get together. And we'll have some hands-on demos, definitely with the BeagleBoard as well as some other hardware.
Okay. Do you think you'll be able to join these calls in the future? I know your new job there at Intel. I don't know if that's going to, you're still have an open source focused job doing the Yocto mentorship, and are you still going to be an active member of the BeagleBoard community? And are you able to participate in calls like this in the future? Maybe we could have you on regularly.
I would be very happy to be on regularly. Since the BeagleBoard is a very big featured part of Yocto, I kind of consider this part of my outreach effort.
Great. I'd love for this not to be the TI show exclusively, and really be more focused on what we need to educate people on embedded Linux and things that they can do with the BeagleBoard and open hardware in general. I know that Gerald has a lot of hardware topics he'd like to be covering in the future. It's not all about strange software groups.
Yeah, you guys do need hardware every now and then.
It's got to run somewhere, really? Doesn't run in a cloud?
I can remember back in the day we used to design logic circuits that didn't need any software, and of course they didn't work any better then than they do now. So.
I read something recently about somebody who was doing trying to embed Linux onto an FPGA and thus basically have a hardware-defined Linux distribution. Don't know.
So he's specifically designing a circuit for Linux, like doing one of the C to gates sort of compilation?
I believe that's what it was, yeah. Let's see if I can find the news article maybe for our next podcast.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. It didn't seem like the Linux kernel would be exactly the thing that would parallelize really well. You know, because, I mean, the wonderful power about, VHDL and, hardware is that it doesn't have to wait until the next clock cycle to do something.
Mm-hmm.
every gate everywhere, and then the entire device is doing something hopefully useful on every clock cycle. But I guess making that a reality is much harder than it would.
Well, there's the ideal, and then there's reality.
Yeah. So great.
I don't want to cut it short, but I'm going to need to get going pretty soon.
Okay. Appreciate your joining us, and we'll just make it a plan. I'm going to try to do these on Fridays and try to put them out on Mondays or Sundays, the start of the week, publish them then, and be great to have you on board.
Cool. I look forward to it.
Appreciate your time, sir.
You betcha. I'll talk to you guys soon.
Take care.
Goodbye.
Amazon has started selling this, I don't know what they call it, consumer-friendly packaging or something like that. Essentially, they take things out of the package for you and put it into something that you can open.
Really?
Yeah, I thought it was great idea. I was looking at some SD cards packaged that way, and they were twice as expensive, but it was almost worth it, right? Just to get something, an SD card that you didn't slice your hand open with plastic trying to get at.
Well, then you always have to have a pair of scissors handy, and then you end up, sticking yourself with the scissors, or like you say, cutting yourself with the plastic. They can be a royal pain. In fact, I've got one right now, the most expensive package I've ever seen. It's a micro SD card with all the various adapters, and I can't figure out how to get the smallest piece back in. There we go. I'm done.
Hmm. Well, I got really lucky on this last one. I just ordered it, and what it said was bulk packaging, and it ended up coming in brown envelopes.
Oh, cool.
Trivial to open.
Yeah, speaking of SD cards, that would be a topic that we probably should cover at some point once we figure out what they're all about, because I've not yet figured it out.
It would be nice to have a real SD card shootout, because we've figured out that the classes don't give you the real information on the performance. You can't just rely on the class numbers.
I spoke with some folks at the Micron, and they said what it really boils down to is the controller that's in there. Because some controllers are optimized for writes, others are optimized for speed or whatever. So,
but they don't see any reason why we couldn't have a real set of benchmarks, to measure the performance of the controller across some reasonable set of conditions.
The problem we ran into in the production there at Beagle was that we'd bought some Kingstons, and we had them. They were, okay, not the best in the world. Got a next batch of boards, and they were slower. We were doing the programming of the cards to ship with the boards. They were taking 5 minutes longer, and that made no sense because they were the same Fast 4 Kingston cards. So, I don't know. My concern is you may find a brand that works reliably and works really well, and then the next batch you get may or may not. It seems to me that SanDisk seems to be the most reliable ones as far as being consistent in whatever that performance is.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's any way for sure to find out, who the manufacturer of the controller is to understand what kind of performance you're going to get.
Well, Steve Stockman,
I know we did a benchmark using one of the benchmark tools on the SD card, and we noticed that the throughput was about 4 megabits per second slower on these cards. And, in fact, there was one area on the card that the performance went way down, for several hundred kbytes, and then it popped back up. So,
well, there's been quite a bit of chat in the last couple weeks on the BeagleBoard IRC channel, I know Steve Sockerman had actually collected some data on different cards and had published that. But I think it was still somewhat limited. I, like you, have had somewhat better success with the SanDisk, or consistency at least, out of the SanDisk cards, and so I've continued to purchase those. But
In fact, I was talking with Chase this morning, and he tried some cards. I bought a bunch of different cards intending to do the same thing myself. So I forgot what manufacturer it was. I'll let him use it. He's a little bit better, not good enough, and he'd run down to Radio Shack and got some SD cards, and they worked really well. And then he found them at the local Fry's here, and they were a lot cheaper. So he seems to be having them at the SanDisk because it can really affect your performance, you know, greatly. In fact, someone was telling me they were at Fry's several months ago in line behind this older gentleman. He must have been, he said, probably in his 70s. And he and his wife were there looking at SD cards. And, well, what's wrong with that one? It's cheaper. He said, no, it's important. I get the best SD card because my Beagle board works better when I have the best SD card.
Yeah.
So I got a real kick out of that story. So obviously Beagle seems to be popular with all age groups.
Yeah. So did you just see back when in the New York Maker Faire, there was a 8-year-old boy that won a Beagle board there at the show, and he was absolutely thrilled. You know, he already had his project planned out that he was gonna go do. Actually, I've forgotten what his project was, but his dad spent about half an hour with me after the boy won the board, asking me questions so that he was prepared to help his son, his 8-year-old son, with his project on his new Beagle board.
That's awesome. I forgot what show it was. There was this kid that was there. I don't know how old he is. He one of these people that got so excited, he literally started hopping up and down, looking at the Beagle board and saying, okay, I've got the older one. I need a newer one. Come on, Dad, get me one. Just hopping up. So, you know, it's good to see people getting excited. I can remember getting into electronics and back in the day, and there were magazines everywhere. You know, the Computer Shopper was, you know, an inch and a half thick, and you knew what everybody was doing and all different things and combinations of things. And it seems to me that over the years it's kind of faded away to a certain extent. You kind of wonder where these people are, if the kids are still involved. And, you know, they're still out there. They exist out there in cyberspace, and if we can touch those people, I think it would be great. We had one kid that we'd worked with wanting to build a product and wanting to go into production. We worked with him for a while, and, you know, we started noticing some little idiosyncrasies and kind of found out the kid was 12 years old.
Yeah.
To make it happen, so I think he finally, I don't know if he gave up, but he decided it wasn't the best time in the world for him to go into business for himself.
I just bought myself another copy of Getting Started in Electronics by Forrest M. Mims III. You know, if you remember all his stuff that was published back by Radio Shack, and, you know, selling all their individual components and stuff. But I absolutely loved that book, that Getting Started in Electronics. That was, I learned more there than I did in the first couple of years in college.
It was on the graph paper look, you know. It was hand drawn.
Yep.
It was great.
The smiley electrons.
Yep. You know, the one thing that's happened, and I guess you can to a certain extent blame, you know, the semiconductor companies for this. Obviously, they were driven in this direction for all the right reasons. But getting a hold of components that you can actually wire up is very difficult these days. I know
you can still find some at Radio Shack and now Fry's. I don't know if you've walked the Fry's aisles. I mean, they have some pretty nice selection of DIP package devices still.
Yes, there's still a few of them around, but some of the more popular ones, you know, you can't get. You get these little surfboards, they're called, where you can solder them on there and put them into, like, solderless breadboards.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, when I got started in the industry, we used to do wire wrap boards. And there was a series of holes you put your DIP packages in. You'd wire it up on the back and create a circuit board in a couple of days. But it's very difficult to do that these days.
So I did some wire wrap boards with, you know, a few hundred nets, and never again. Soldering is just too easy. They're teaching, you know, 6- and 7-year-olds how to solder at these you know, first graders, right? These maker fairs and, you know, in other places, you know, I see these kids solder. And why on earth would you, you know, use a solderless breadboard to connect some stuff up? Alligator clips, fine, but why on earth would you wire wrap?
Yeah, well, we used to, you know, that was back when, we're not going to talk about how far along ago that was, but anyway, these would be big breadboards. I mean, these would be a foot by foot, and you'd have 100, 150 ISVs on it. And you take your schematic, and you'd have to hand do the net list. And you have a net list, you know, a column and row, basically, and you'd wire them in there. You'd plug it in, and smoke would come out of it, and you'd have a wiring error. You fix the error. You had that error, you put a couple more chips in, you plug it in, and they'd burn up again. So you still had one. So, but that was back in the day.
And then it runs for a few hours, and that electrolytic cap that you put in backwards catches fire.
Oh, Lord. We had that for quite a bit. In fact, there was a guy I was working with that had it on an extender board that plugged into a card cage, and he's up against the wall, and all of a sudden we hear this kaboom, and the electrolytic cap blew, and he said, "You okay? Yeah, yeah, I'm fine." And he turned around and stood up, and the right side of his face was black, all in his hair. His hair was singed. And I tell you what, another, you know, inch or so in the other direction, you know, hit him right in the eye. So he was very fortunate.
Well, do you know about this 555 timer contest that's ongoing? Because it was that contest that really got me interested in picking up my copy of Getting Started in Electronics again, because it's the first one that introduced me to the 555 timer.
I've seen that, and believe it or not, I still work with 555 from time to time. I like to use them for PWM controllers. You can hook up a digital pot to it, control it over I2C or SPI, and it makes a very nice PWM controller, you know, controlling a FET for motors.
Well, how do you get the state held with the? So you're saying based on I2C, what are you adjusting?
Digital
in order
pot.
To change?
So basically,
okay, digital pot. Okay.
It's a dual, you know, 555, and
that makes sense.
Control the voltage, and that sets the duty cycle. You know, it moves it back and forth, and you can find it several places. But it's very well documented on how to do it, but they work extremely well.
Well, you should have tied one up to a Beagle board and controlled something with it and entered it in the 555 timer contest.
That's a good idea, actually.
Well, I don't know if you have any time left. I think they're judging them right now.
Well, you know, my software skills on the Beagle board aren't what they need to be, so it'd probably take me 6 years to get my software working.
Well, eventually we'll get this, the I2C, SPI, GPIO poking stuff down real simple. I finally got my Cloud9 IDE running on the Beagle board. I just brought it up today, in fact. So I've got Node.js running, and I've got Cloud9 IDE. It's a JavaScript editor. I'm doing this all because I want to make it where you just edit everything in JavaScript. You actually, you know, poke the kernel, interact with the kernel to do your low-level I/O, and you just do it all over a web browser. So you'll just do all your editing, so you can make an SD card image that you can just drop on your Beagle board, and it's going to have a web server. You just point your web browser to it, and it'll give you an editor, and you can start peeking and poking with the GPIOs, the I2Cs, and
whatnot. That would be awesome. I mean, when you and I first did the Beagle, you were trying to decide what expansion to put out there.
I wanted you to have no expansion header. I said, it's just for software. You know, if anybody needs
exactly.
to expand this, they can just connect something up over USB. Why do we need a hardware expansion header?
But I2C, you know, everybody's using that. They use the SPI, you know, quite heavily. So, you know, if we can do that, you know, setting up the pin muxing, setting up, you know, as input-output pins, setting them up as interrupts, you know, things of that nature, I think that would go a long way to help people hook up the different things that they're trying to hook up to today.
Yeah, I'm going to be trying all this as soon as I can get my new Trainer XM. So they did a version that has the XM headers on it now, because before if you wired it up with the headers that they gave you, the existing Trainer didn't work with the XMs. So now they're shipping an XM version of that. So I'll be using that to kind of demonstrate doing all the I/O with this JavaScript environment.
Excellent.
Looking forward to that one. Spent some time last week messing with U-Boot, trying to do some mainline patches. One of them resulted in...
Yeah, I saw that going across the wire. And that's a good topic that we ought to talk about at some point, is how to do that. And
how to contribute upstream?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah,
that,
yeah.
That could be a, you know, when we first get started, from what I've seen, that can be kind of a, I won't say demoralizing, but it definitely something that shows you have a little bit to learn. There's a definite way to do it. You don't really know how people are going to react until you do it. You just have to just keep plugging at it to get things, you know, accepted upstream. But I think that would be a very good topic of discussion.
Yeah. I mean, the main thing is, you know, be polite, right? Don't realize that, you know, you're dealing with people who know a lot and work hard and don't want their time wasted, but you're anxious to, you know, bring other people into the fold that are going to help them be more productive and get more things done. And so they want you in their project most cases, and just got to be polite and listen to the feedback, actually listen to it and follow it. Don't continue to ignore advice that you're given. But just get out there and start, you know, start contributing and start getting the feedback. I'm still pretty, still in the early stages of my U-Boot contributions, but, you know, it's not really that hard.
Yeah. And I think the more people that contribute and even try to contribute, the better. I mean, I'm one of those that don't believe in the stupid question. You know, I've had a lot of stupid questions posed to me over my career that have triggered, well, that's a different way to look at it, and I looked at issues with a totally different perspective, and while the question was still stupid, it did cause me to look at things differently. So if people are trying to do things, you know, why would you want to do that? Oh, I never thought of that before. So even though you may not have the exact skills at that point to get it up there and enough experience, you know, it could trigger thoughts with other people that do know how to do that, and, you know, your ideas could actually get taken upstream, you know, just implemented by other people, and you still get, you know, get your goal done of adding that capability or that feature.
But there, in some cases, though, that's not always clear, you know, what the best answer is, and, of course, getting it out there and getting a lot of different opinions, you know, maybe sooner or later, you know, one really good idea can sort of strike as being, you know, the right way to go, and it's so it's,
well,
nice,
you know,
to have that,
for
the
example,
community feedback.
The page that you were trying to push up through there about using scripts.
Well, that one's still up in the air a bit, right? So this one with the UENV.txt, it's just really just using environment scripts versus so previously we had this the U-Boot scripts were had to be images, and they were essentially commands that would get executed, and, you know, you had to run this U-Boot make image command, and I can't remember exactly what the what it was called for one of, what these scripts were called, but now they have a way to actually save environment variables to text files, and it's, instead of being scripts, it's just environment variable savings. So we're talking about changing the U-Boot main line such that on BeagleBoard, the default would be to look for an environment variable text file rather than to look for a boot script. And that means you could just use a generic text editor, pull the card out, edit it in a in another computer.
Well, from my perspective, I think that is absolutely awesome.
Yeah, it's going to make things a lot easier. The problem is, oh, it's a different file name. Oh, it's not scripts anymore. It's variable settings.
Yeah. Well, you know,
different.
I think the reality is, and people need to, you know, stop and think about this, is that one of the things that the Beagle is good for is getting people into Linux. And, you know, a lot of these people, you know, don't have Linux machines. They, you know, they do have, you know, Windows-type machines and stuff. And
mm-hmm.
then to be able to do this and do without having to do the make image stuff and everything is definitely an advantage. Now, obviously, I think at the end of the year or the day or whatever you want to call it, you'd like people to be able to make their own images and do it the other way. But this will definitely solve a lot of issues for people and give them a better appreciation in the field for Linux and get them more and more into it.
Yeah, I think definitely the right thing to do is to make it easier to edit without having Linux tools on your machine, your other machines, just to where you can use a generic text editor. But
the problem kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier about the
wiki
question. To a lot of the people that are into Linux and the maintainers and so forth, is why would you want to do this? I don't need to do this. I mean, that's crazy. Just learn how to do it. And that's sometimes something that we forget, is that we've got people that are getting into this, and if you can have them and give them capability of doing things that they can easily do in the world they're in today, the better their experience, and so that they can get into here. But you've got to, take their perspective in mind when you think of these things. I mean, the idea is to get a lot more people involved with Linux and better capability, and especially with Android taking off like it is and everything, we need to make that as easy for people as possible to get into it. And like I said, as they get into it, then they can learn how to do it the other ways. But
yeah, the response I got, though, from the experts on the IRC channel was that this, this took me 5 minutes to figure out what you changed and to deal with it, but I'm going to be getting a question a day on the IRC channel about what happened to boot SCR, what's going on, people freaking out because this makes all of those wiki pages obsolete.
Okay, so answer me this. Why did TTY change?
TTY.
Did you know? I'm sure there was a good reason. I don't know what it is right now.
I don't know that it was a good reason, but the letter stood for which driver was being used to generate the TTY. And I'm not an expert on this. I'm sure that some folks on the greater experts on the OMAP kernel development could tell me better. But the reason it was TTYS and a number was because it was using a generic serial port driver. But because the OMAP serial port actually has a lot of features that aren't in the generic serial port, when it was enabled to use the OMAP serial port driver rather than a generic serial port driver, the name changed to correspond to what driver was being used. So now it's O for OMAP.
Gotcha.
Serial port driver, as opposed to S, I think, was the generic serial port driver name. I'm not even sure that S was a generic serial port, but...
Well, that's easy enough. All you got to do then is go on your text file and just type it in, you're done, right?
That's pretty much it. Now, there's one other place. There's two places that it primarily impacts. There's the console that's specified on the Linux kernel command line. So you just edit that in that environment text file and say console equals TTY O 2, comma 115200 in 8 instead of TTY S 2. The other place is where your init tab, so where all you get the shells started by init, all right? So where do you want to have login run? Where can you have consoles or terminals open on your machine? And so et cetera init tab, you need to change the S entry to an O entry and et cetera init tab as well. So don't know if you've ran into that other change, but that one should be done as well. You could just add both, but then you'll get a bunch of errors on the screen that one of them isn't responding, and you have to, which adds a little bit of confusion.
Right. Okay.
So that is the mystery behind TTY02. So newer kernels that use that driver need that O2 instead of S2.
Yeah, of course we haven't hit that real broadly, but as we we're going to be releasing here the Beagle XMRefC, which is basically just going to the next next revision of the processor, nothing major, but one of the things that we want to do is put in, you know, the latest kernel and things like that and release it. So I think once those things start shipping and then we make that image available and people start using it, that is probably going to come up, you know. I think the topic will be one that's commonly discussed.
Yeah, hopefully one of the new Angstrom release candidates with the 2.6.37 kernel will end up working out. That's what I'm playing with right now is 2.6.37. I also saw that the Linaro guys did an Alpha 3 release. I guess they're working towards their 11.05 or their May release of Linaro. And they've got their BeagleBoard kernel at 2.6.38 release candidate. I don't know if it was 3 or 5 or something. But one of the release candidates also for the upcoming 2.6.38.
Okay.
It would be really great to have people, you know, really poking at the mainline, you know, 2.6.38 release candidates, getting those BeagleBoard bug fixes in so that when 2.6.38 comes out, you know, hopefully that's something that can be just used as is. But there's still a lot of patches that still aren't upstream yet.
Is there a concept in the Linux world of like a patch status where that people can look to see what's up there and what's not?
Well,
if there's a problem, okay, we need to get this pushed upstream, but here's the patch. If people want to go out and grab that patch and go ahead and take care of the issue and their kernel build, their builds at the moment, okay, that they would be allowed to do that. I mean,
there's a lot of different ways and places where that gets managed and monitored. So there's patchwork that has a list of patches that have been, sent in to the mailing list, and then the patchwork status, like, so Linux OLMAP, right, has a patchwork repository, and you can look at those patches and see what their disposition is, whether or not there's been feedback that they need to get updated or different things, but it's not completely exhaustive, and not everything is being worked up through the Linux OLMAP tree, right? Some things come up through some of the other subsystem trees, and each of the different subsystem maintainers may have a slightly different process for maintaining status. Linaro keeps some status information out at status.linaro.org for their efforts. You know, you've got the Ubuntu folks Launchpad, and with Angstrom, you know, you can go and look at what their patch set is, how they patch the kernel today, and a lot of people using the BeagleBoard and trying to get good working kernels. You know, the Angstrom folks have been, you know, and Kuhn in particular has been really good at getting some good functions into the Angstrom kernel. So you can just go look at their Git repository and see how they're patching the Linux kernel.
I think that would be good to, especially for those people that are new to Linux, actively get this type of information out to them. Here on my computer, I just brought up the status for Linaro, and it's interesting. They've got low, medium, high, and essential patches, and what percentage of those patches have made it up.
Yep. Yeah, so there's good stuff going on, and there's ways to find the information, but, yeah, I agree, it's not the easiest to find. There's also TI has some wiki pages, a little bit out of date. I've been trying to poke some of the people, you know, inside of TI to get it updated. I think the new releases are coming out soon for 2.6.37 for the TI kernels. But there's on the processors.wiki.ti.com, you can search around there, and there's status for you know, TI pushing some patches upstream.
Excellent.
Yeah, lots going on to push stuff upstream, but it takes a lot of work and it takes a lot of time. But I think that, you know, TI is now, I think, the number 8 contributor to the Linux kernel, I think, was the last measure. Jonathan Corbett does a really nice status report on, you know, who the contributors are to the Linux kernel. And LWN.net is a nice source for news about development on the Linux on Linux. Definitely recommend reading that.
There's just so much stuff out there. It's just
hopefully we can, you know, use this format to bring in some of the answers for people. Still have a lot of other stories that pulled in off of the web over the last week and put into the BeagleWard RSS feed. You know, I did my little blog post about reading Linux input events in Perl. I think that you can do a lot in scripting languages, and the input events I think are still something a bit mystical to people who are not familiar with Linux and are trying to do I/O and are used to just being able to read a register and capture an interrupt in order to do things that they want to monitor, you know, pressing of a button or something. But I did a really simple example where you're waiting on the user button.
Cool. There's just so much information out there, and you know, I think we could help a lot of these people. Again, I kind of go back to the ones that are just now starting out in the Linux world, and you know, like the conversation we've had in the past, it's like you've almost got to be a little bit of a private investigator and know where to look, you know, for things. But there's just so much out there that I think they could find beneficial, and you know, they just need to get out there and just start looking. But if we could give them some places to kind of start from, you know, I think that would definitely help them out a lot. And you know, doing what you've done here, you know, with the scripts and things of that nature, that needs to be something that, you know, we need to figure out how to get that information to people and break it down for them so that they're successful. I mean, a lot of times I think people are so, yeah, I want to try this, and you know, well, it didn't work. I did everything. It didn't work. And they skip two or three.
Well, if the software would just stop changing, maybe I could get to try to write something like that for the software world. When, you know, every quarter you get a new release of Linux, you know, the Linux kernel, it's tough to keep up with, so.
It is tough to keep up with. It is very tough to keep up with, and it's just, you know, but I don't know that, you know, saying that this is the price you pay is the right term, but this is one of the benefits of open source. It does move very, very quickly. It's kind of hard to keep up with it at times, but you do get a lot of innovation. You get a lot of people involved, and you get the best minds versus having something that's coming from more of a, you know, corporate environment. Well, you know, here's our release, and we'll give you a new one in 6 months. You know, you can get your problems fixed early, and more importantly, the problem has already been fixed by somebody else, and you just need to know where to go find it and apply that patch or do your own build or whatever it is, you can quickly get those things that you care about taken care of. But the price you have to pay for that is that, you know, you've got to stay up with it. You know, you've got to understand and learn the best places to look and for the topics that you're concerned about, and go there on a daily basis and see what's going on.
Well, I'm seeing more and more downstream distributions, though, really provide, you know, decent support for the BeagleBoard, right? You know, if you go straight to Ubuntu.com and start looking, or, you know, for Ubuntu, it's still a little bit convoluted how you go find that, but it's in the official releases, and you can search their wiki pages for essentially all the information you need to get started with Ubuntu on the BeagleBoard. On the XM, now that we've gotten rid of the NAND flash, you know, some people, you know, cry foul there for no NAND flash. But I love the fact that, you know, you can now take that Win32 disk image writer that's coming from the Ubuntu guys and use that and take an SD card image, you know, run it on your Windows laptop, you know, and format your SD card and put it in there, and you know that it's going to work. right. I think that we need to make sure not to add any hardware incompatibilities between new versions, right? And I think that that's been, they've typically been extremely minor, but any change that requires a software change, you know, means that those static software images will no longer work clean.
Right. Speaking of Ubuntu, I'd heard that it wasn't clear whether the support was going to continue at Ubuntu for the next gen, the next gen kernel release. Have you heard anything else about that?
No, I think that there was some. I really don't know anything about why they wouldn't continue to support ARM architectures and the BeagleBoard in particular for future releases. I really don't know why they wouldn't.
I mean, of course, there's always talk. Sometimes it's founded in fact, and sometimes it's just a rumor.
Well, whatever negotiation goes on between TI and Canonical and ARM Limited, and who gets paid for doing what is one thing. I don't think the Canonical and the Ubuntu communities were paid for BeagleBoard support in specific on the last release, right? Because they had their Panda boards. I think that there were other focuses for which they're being, paid for. I think that, we have just some excellent community members, Robert Nelson does, and
right.
And of course, Ricardo Salvetti and the other guys are very interested in enabling the community developers, where they need the support.
From a Beagle perspective, if you think about, things starting to move to 2.6.37 and so forth, what would be in Beagles.org's best interest as far as legacy releases? Should we always try to encourage people to go to the latest, or how do we...
There always needs to be something known stable for which people can verify the functionality of their hardware and use as a starting point to learn from. All right. So there needs to be something that's known good and that they can refer back to for years, surviving any hardware changes that might occur, revisions of the board, so that they can acquire the latest version of the board and still run this legacy software and, be able to perform their labs, go follow some of these wiki pages, right? So you ought to be able to still get a version of the U-boot that uses that silly boot.scr, even though there's this environment script thing now if you go looking at the new stuff. That's why I tried to write when I did the BeagleBoard Diagnostics Next, wiki page entry and the instructions. There are currently some issues with the build script, but the process I try to follow is one where that metadata that's required to build that image and the functionality that's described together will work going forward. I think that's something that under the Google Summer of Code project this summer, we really need to put together that whole experience in a way and have it preserved for the ages.
I think that would be awesome. So, you're talking about Robert, the great work that he's done for Ubuntu and Beagle and so forth. What do you think his perspective would be as far as providing legacy support for that? I would think he'd want everybody to move to the latest.
I'd probably speak for too many people as it is. I don't know that I want to speak for Robert.
I don't want to speak for him. I was thinking from the standpoint of, what would our expectation be? Would we expect him? Do we think it's in Beagle's best interest that he continue to provide support there, being that he's an army of one?
Well,
okay, or would our expectation be that he would say, okay, here it is, here's a snapshot, you can go get this, and then, if you have some things you want fixed, then you just need to go to the next one. I mean, it's a problem.
I think that developers I think developers should be free to focus on the next one and encourage users to, well, you know, please report issues to me on the latest. That said, that, you know, there are places where, you know, freezing and stabilizing, you know, are appropriate. I think you just need to be very selective about those points in which you freeze. Do you want to consume a, you know, a resource like Robert Nelson, who's solving so many problems for different people and helping them move to new cool stuff, and say, Robert, you know, please slow down and support the old stuff? I don't think that's a good way. I don't think that would be the best interest of the BeagleBoard project. You know, for too many people to get on them to support old stuff.
A lot. You know, from a BeagleBoard.org perspective, by helping to set certain expectations, okay, mm-hmm. within the community, within developers, that will free them up to do that kind of stuff and say, hey, you know, here it is, you're free to use it, blah, 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 but, you know, we're going to try to move on to the latest stuff because things do keep moving so quickly. And, you know, for someone, again, going back to my pet project about people that are new to the Linux world, they may or may not understand that, you know. We've had several emails on the email group here back this past week. Yeah, I'm trying to get to work on some earlier version. Well, why would you want to do that? Why don't you just go to this version? It's been around for a while and it's stable. Why do you want to do that? You know, there may be some other reasons why they want to do that, because they've got some software of their own that was written for the earlier release that they've got to stick with or something. You know, I don't know. But they could get, you know, a little bit you know, disenfranchised, I guess, is the word, by saying, well, I can't get support in this older stuff. But if we...
Yeah, but I think that you look at the goals of BeagleBoard, I think that, you know, advancing the state of the open source software is a higher priority than supporting sort of stale development. And, you know, such stale development, you know, makes a lot of sense when you're like a commercial developer. And there are just so many other options out there. You know, you've got, I don't want to throw out the word stale and then mention some other development options and make them sound like they're not, you know, don't have advanced and timely software. But there are just so many other great commercial development platforms that are pulling from the software of the BeagleBoard and taking advantage of the, you know, the core circuitry, and give you a starting point, and, you know, and are, you know, anxious to, you know, provide commercial support, you know, in their software and hardware offerings. And I don't know why you'd want to put that on Beagle and slow the community down.
I agree, because, you know, one of the things you bring up here is another thing I had in mind when I started talking about this was, one of the nice things about BeagleBoard.org is, you know, we support everybody. We're open to everybody. We don't care who you are, what you do, where you come from, anything. But, you know, there's newbies, there's oldies, so to speak, and then there's also people that are trying to build products. And we don't try to figure out who's actually trying to build a product, and you know, we don't really care what they do with it. But, you know, they may be ones that would need support like this. And they've kind of got in their mind that they can get it from Beagle, and mm-hmm. we just need to set the right expectation to say, hey, if this is what you're doing, this is what we suggest that you do. You know, Beagle is fast-moving, you know, mid- to leading-edge type activities, and, you know, if you're working on a project for a year and a half, you're going to be quite a bit behind because we're going to be moving on. So if you can get that messaging out to the community and those that participate, and make sure they understand what the tone is and what we're trying to do, and then maybe that way they won't get as frustrated, and they'll understand more about what we're trying to do.
Yeah. The counterbalance for me, though, is that we do need to do something to stabilize in order to make it possible to get younger entry CEO out of college, you know, in college, you know, if you look at Mark Yoder's class, right, and he's trying to dive into some deeper topics that you know, require that, you know, if you want to deal with, you know, the DSP programming, right, you don't want to have to worry about the rest of this Linux stuff, right? You just want to work on your DSP code. You know, you need a stable environment for which you can go and focus on this one aspect a bit, and or to go and learn Linux and stuff for the first time, you need to have a lot of labs and some stuff that's worked out and needs to be stable for a good time. And that's why I think that having a project around BeagleBoard that is stable does make some sense, but I think it should just be somewhat limited. We can't, I don't know that we want, okay, do we need a stable Android? Do we need a stable Ubuntu? Do we need a stable, you know, every single one of these? And for some of these other projects like Ubuntu, right, they have their long-term support branches. And, you know, if they have these SD card images, that experience with, you know, 10.04 Ubuntu should be consistent for a fairly long period of time anyway.
Right, I agree.
Okay. I think there's probably a lot more to dive into the details about, you know, where the project should go in terms of, what should be stable and what should go on.
We talked earlier about the wikis and how they can and get stale and things of that nature, and it takes some work. Okay.
So it needs automation. This is a
people within the open source community contributing upstream to the, you know, upstream releases and so forth. It seems to me we ought to be able to figure out some way that we can say, hey, this is the main wiki, if you will. We want you to contribute. We want your input. We want to keep it fresh and updated. And then here's the next 50 or 60 ones that we'd like everybody to look after, focus on, and make sure that they're up to date, and help those people that have those wikis as well.
Well, this is a somewhat software solvable problem, right? And the BeagleBoard project page is something that, you know, there's 200 projects listed up there, but, you know, you're never sure, you know, okay, there's six different Androids, which one do I go and look at, you know, which one's actually being worked on, which one's up to date, and I think that there's a lot that we can be done through, you know, programmatic automation, to say, okay, if you've got an auto builder tied to your project, right, you know, and you have a stable build for which there's documentation against, and you have a nightly build, and I think that's stuff that can all be fed into the consolidated BeagleBoard.org portal through some scripts, and I think that's going to make an excellent Google Summer of Code project.
Okay, that'll be great. And when does Google Summer of Code get started?
Well, March 11th is the date for which mentoring organizations can begin making applications. I believe that's begin, I think the 28th maybe when they announce dates. Probably shouldn't be quoting things. It's going to get recorded and then have it be wrong. So say, look at the show notes. I'll create some show notes. That goes out with this, and it'll include the dates for Google Summer of Code. BeagleBoard.org/GSOC. There you go. That's where, if you want to find out about BeagleBoard.org's application to Google Summer of Code for 2011, visit BeagleBoard.org/GSOC.
It'll be good. I mean, of course, we have these every year, so, you know, I would not be opposed to even the concept of saying, okay, here's phase one, we're going to do this, this is going to be the foundation, we're going to do these automation tools, and then after those release, we look at improvements that can be made and new things that can be added to it, and then when the next Google Summer of Code comes around, we maybe have another couple of projects that improve on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we've got all this technology, and obviously, as we've had experience here this morning, it isn't always as easy. If we can really help pull some of this stuff together, I think it would be great. You know, it's like anytime I have a problem with my PC, you know, I always do a Google search and I find out that somebody has already solved it, okay? And if we could get to a point where we could do stuff like that within the open source / Beagle realm, I think that would be.
Well, I never find problems on my Beagle that I can't solve on by doing a Google search. So I think you just it's still that that initial experience before you really know what to Google search for.
Yes, yes. It's not the answer that's important. It's the question. If you don't ask the right question on Google, you're not going to get the right answer.
Yeah. So what do you say we wrap up with 10 minutes, just the last 10 minutes, we try to blast through some of the news on the pulled up through the RSS feed, just kind of blast through that, and then just because I think we're running long a bit, just kind of want to touch on these things real quick, and then we'll call it a podcast for the week.
That sounds like a plan.
Did you hear about the student robotics stuff? They build a robotics kit based around the Beagle Board. It's I think there's maybe about four universities in the south of England, I don't know which part of England actually, where Bristol is. There's a nice talk from some of the students. They have this thing that's kind of like what we did for our community lightning talks.
Oh.
Where they give these little 5-minute talks, and they did one on student robotics at Ignite Bristol.
I seem to recall something about student project, but I'm not exactly up to date on that.
It's pretty cool, pretty grassroots. They have a nice kit. One of the cooler things for the robotics that they're doing. That's really cool to me is it's all atomic. No remote controls. A lot of these robotics competitions involve remote controls, and I like this one that's just all automated. And they're actually they're going after what they call sixth formers. Not really sure if that's a secondary school or post-secondary school, but I think it's in the age of like 16 to 18 year olds.
Okay. Excellent.
Pretty cool stuff.
Now that reminds me, we got a request last week, to try to get a hold of 50 Beagle Boards for a high school.
Excellent.
I'm not sure which high schools these days have the funding and everything to do something like that, but they were definitely looking at doing something with it. So those type of things are really interesting to me.
I think that high school students can clearly figure out how to do a significant amount of stuff with a Beagle Board, right? I mean, you're running Ubuntu. I mean, that's the same stuff that they're probably running at home, right? I run into high school students as part of the U.S. First volunteering that I do a little bit of that use Ubuntu on their laptops and at home all the time. And Angstrom is actually, when you did the Angstrom GNOME stuff, that's, it feels pretty similar. It feels pretty comfortable.
Yes, it does.
Buildroot. I don't know if we need to do like a distro overview sometime, just like have I think what you call it a distro war. So we should probably just have a distro war all show. Discussion sometime, but Buildroot is one of the really minimal distributions, especially good for MUSI Linux based. So when you're not using the MMU,
well, I think it would be good to for those that are just new to this. I want to do XYZ. I want to do XBMC, or I want to do this or that. Which would be the easiest for them to get started with? I mean, we do ship the open embedded with the board because we just had to pick one, but we're fans of all of them. So, I think that would be good to try to get into discussion about that at one of our next sessions.
Yeah. Aaron, nobody's really provided a whole lot of strong feedback on what distro should be on the board, really. Something I've seen.
I have not seen that either. We obviously have to put something on there and allow us to test the goofy thing. But, if accessibility to these other distros was really easy.
Angstrom's a nice one. But Buildroot is, I found really interesting when I looked at it. I couldn't find a def config, so it uses the kernel def config sort of menu options to choose which board you're targeting. I know that the Free Electrons folks, I think, did some they have some training for BeagleBoard, and I think that they used buildroot as part of the build the root file system and kernel for that training. But I couldn't find a BeagleBoard def config in the project yet. You know, it recently in the latest releases, they actually have the GStreamer plugins for the TI DSP-based codecs. So Fluke Contreras has pushed patches for those. So they have, DSP-accelerated codecs, but no kernel build for the BeagleBoard. Got on their IRC channel, and lots of people are using the BeagleBoard and have their kernel configs for the BeagleBoard. But it's not in the mainstream project, which I found a bit odd.
Maybe we can work with these folks and try to provide a little influence and convince them to take care of this.
Well, they're open to accepting patches. They said, you just told me, hey, point me to a reasonable kernel and send the patches, and we'll take them. But because a lot of people are using them, I think that the one developer that I spoke to just, he said that, his was essentially a commercial project that he was working on, and it was a BeagleBoard clone. So he wasn't doing the testing on the actual BeagleBoard. So he was making use of all the GStreamer bits, but, because it was for a commercial project, he wasn't submitting the patches that he had for that.
Okay.
I've got one that, I think we've got 5 minutes left, and I've got one that might incite you, but don't know how you're going to respond to this one. Did you see Tenet Tektronix announce availability? They're now selling XM boards. Are they an approved distributor?
Yeah.
They are. Oh, okay.
Now, I'm not going to say any names, but we've had one there in India, and I've not really been that. You can get them. Their website's not real friendly. What's nice about these guys, and we held them off for quite a while. We haven't listed them on the website. Basically, what I like to do is let them work for a while and see how they do before we start driving everybody their direction. But they're very active. They've got support site and blogs and this and that, and they seem to be doing what we like to see our distributors do, which is promote the Beagle and help their customers that buy it support it. So yes, they are a soon to be official. Basically, they're on a trial basis, and they've not gotten their first shipment of boards yet. I think they're due this week, I believe.
Well, they said that they're going to start shipping. If you look at their post, they said they're going to start shipping on March 10th.
Yeah, they should. Yeah, that sounds about right. They should be. Last I talked to them, based on the shipping, that they were going to get their first batch of boards this week. So we'll see how they do. I mean, obviously, anybody that wants to sign up will listen, but we want to make sure that they're going to do more than just say, hey, your boards are for sale. Okay,
well, this is pretty exciting to get another indie or an indie distributor. I wasn't aware since nobody had asked me to update the buy page.
So we got a couple. We've got a couple in China. Chipsy's one of them. I think that we'll be putting them on the page here pretty soon. They're doing a very good job over there. And we get 4 or 5 requests a week from people, and obviously we can't take them all. So we kind of these Tenet guys. I really put them through the ringer, and they got quiet for a week or two, and they kept coming back, and I'd slap them again, and they kept coming back, so I knew that they were serious. And so, based on the stuff that they're doing and their website and things of that nature, I think they're going to be a good one for us, but we'll see. We'll see how they get rid of these boards, how many they sell, and we'll take it from there. Talking about the distributors, we ran across another distributor out in Florida that's selling BeagleBoard XMs for $200 a piece, and you can get quotes up to 500 boards. We're trying to figure out.
Is it a clone, or is it really
exactly
the
where they're getting their boards and what they're doing?
Okay.
Well, they obviously sell them at a much higher price than other distributors, so we're checking into them and trying to figure out what they're all about.
Yeah, so maybe they mean that it's a clone, and they're just maybe not positioning it quite right.
Yeah, I've not heard of them, but, you know, they sell a lot of different products from different companies.
Yeah. And we were discussing earlier, I guess you saw Kuhn made his BeagleBoard coasters with his MakerBot.
Oh, yeah. That 3D printing is really nice.
I think that's slick. I've got to get one of these machines. I don't know. I keep thinking that the price is going to drop just a little bit more, or, you know, it's going to just, you know, a little bit more updated electronics, and I'm just on the fence of buying my own MakerBot, but
yeah,
the thing is cool.
Yeah, for those people out there that don't know about MakerBot, yeah, I'll check them out. Jason and I had the privilege of meeting with those folks several months back when we were up on a trip to New York, and they do some really, really neat stuff.
Yeah.
Definitely worth checking out.
Yep. So he's got his BeagleBoard coasters. He told me this week he corrected the case on the second B in BeagleBoard, so now it's a camel case. I think his original picture showed the board being a lowercase B, but pretty neat little case.
I kind of wonder how long it takes to make one of those. Maybe he can start making those suckers commercially available.
Well, they've got that. The MakerBot now has this thing where it'll kick it off the tray. So however long it takes, you can have it do a series of them one after another, and it'll kick them off and off the tray, and you can collect them later.
Excellent. I had not heard that.
Yeah. It's a pretty cool little feature. Adobe Flash 10.01 with DSP accelerated H.264 was released for the DM3730. I don't know if anybody's actually integrated that into their BeagleBoard distro yet, but having Adobe Flash with accelerated H.264 is probably a pretty cool thing.
Flash is always good.
Don't know that Apple would agree with you on that, or that everybody in the world would agree with you on that. But, you know,
well,
having it available for your hardware is better than not having it available.
Actually, if I were to be an honest person here, you know, whenever I go to a website that if Flash pops up to begin with, if I'm not desperate to go to that website, I usually just close it off and go to the next link on Google.
Yeah. I'm hopeful that a lot more of the HTML5 Canvas stuff really takes off, and Canvas and SVG, and people can slow down their use of anything proprietary. But in the meantime, you want to be able to browse all the content, so it's nice to have the plugin available for you. The TikTok guys have a Gumsticks camera. One of our friends over there at Gumsticks. So I don't know if you've seen the TikTok. They started with the BeagleBoard, then they needed something smaller, and so they ended up going with the Gumsticks Overo boards. And now they've got some cameras available that use that small ribbon connector.
It's a nice mod that's got a very, very nice lens on it.
Oh, you've looked at it?
Yeah.
Cool. ArmDevices.net guy, I only see his nickname. I don't actually recall what the guy's name is, but Carbox. He interviewed TI's Roger Monk in front of the Beagle Wall. So he took a video of that with the Beagle Wall running.
The Beagle Wall.
The Beagle Wall. So this is a nice new video of the Beagle Wall. Hopefully we'll be getting one to the U.S. soon. I'm really hoping to reproduce that, but I don't know that we have enough money in the BeagleBoard.org and call first. We're going to have to convince TI to buy one.
Well, maybe we just need to get the one from over there shipped over here to show it off and tell everybody we've got to ship it back, and maybe they'll change their mind.
If they have to pay for the shipping back?
Yeah. So the shipping, so if we make sure the shipping here is half of what it costs to build one on our own, then maybe we'll get there.
Yeah. All right. That's my quick run through of the RSS feed. Seems like we have more to talk about than we can possibly fit in an hour weekly show, but maybe we'll at some point get caught up enough on topics to merely feel rushed rather than overwhelmed.
Sounds good to me.
All right, Drew, I would appreciate your time.
Same here. Take care, guys.
Thanks. Bye.
So that does it for the inaugural BeagleCast. As we work out the format, we'll definitely try to shorten it next time. We'll be looking for your questions and suggestions, hopefully to be included in the next week's BeagleCast, and have a great week.